16 million colors. Wreak some havoc in your head. Welcome to Titan Cast, your home for Sega Saturn news, commentary, personal stories, and more. My name's Samuel, the Southern Sega Gentleman. With me today, hailing all the way from Manchester, our Lord and Savior, our Father K, the patron saint himself, Simon. On top of that, we've also got our Portugal man, the sleeper, Nebuchadnezzar. And not to be forgotten, of course, we also have our West Coast correspondent, the virtuous schlub. So ladies and gents, as usual, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about what we've been doing for the past week, get up into the nitty-gritty details. And with that being said, I am going to go ahead and pass the baton over to Brian and let him start us off.
I've been up to a couple of things recently. Mainly, I threw up a video about the Rhea, just kind of my musings and random discussion about what it is. I spent a little bit of time with it, so I have some impressions, kind of what potential I feel it has in preserving the hardware side of things, as well as why we have a bit more work to do to make sure that it has the impact that it could possibly have and be as accessible to the people that need it in the community. I'm also playing a few random games across multiple platforms. I'm definitely playing a lot of racing games on the Saturn, like Grand Chaser, Daytona USA, and a few others, which has been kind of fun. I'm also, since we did our last podcast last week, the Radiant Silver Gun, when I talked about that in our Shmups episode, I've been playing quite a bit of that as well. So I've kind of have a new refound addiction there, I think, that I'm trying to satiate. And then I also, I've been playing a little PlayStation VR. There's a game called Moss that came out a few weeks ago, and it's kind of a storybook fantasy world. You're basically guiding this little mouse through a series of mystical environments. You know, there's like forests and lush, like old, like foggy battlefields and ruins and all sorts of really cool locales to explore, and the VR perspective really adds a ton to how you interact and view that environment that really I think offers an incredibly fresh sense of perspective that really emphasizes how cool VR can be when used correctly. I love that game, but anyway, that's pretty much what's new for me.
All right, good stuff from you, Brian. Go ahead, Nuno, talk to us.
Okay, well, I just made a video for YouTube. It's going to be uploaded later this week, as usual, on Friday. And it's not that video, that one that I've been talking about for what seems like forever. It's a review of one of the games that we talked about in the last podcast. It was one of my choices, one of the two games that I chose to talk about. And I felt that it's a really good game and it deserves its own review, where I go into it more in depth into the gameplay, and I also talk a bit about the history of the game, the history of the developer, what led to the creation of that game, and I also compare all of the different ports of the game, because there's more than one, and I bet you're interested in knowing how the Saturn version stacks up against the other ports. Let me tell you, it's good. But exactly what are the differences? Well, you'll have to check it out and see. About that other video, it's coming along. I would say it's about 80% done. So I hope, I really shouldn't give a date. It's going to come back and bite me. But I would hope that in a couple of weeks, the other video will be ready and will finally be uploaded. And when it's finally up and out there, I'll probably go into a rant on Facebook to talk about the history of that video, what led up to it, why did it take so long, and what's the deal with it, why so much hype, and why so long to make it. So, yeah, that's it for me. But Talking about gaming, what gaming have I been doing? Well, not much actually, aside from just playing games to record footage for the videos, which is what I've been mostly doing during the past, I don't know, couple of weeks or even more. Basically, all of my gaming, just playing a game for a bit to record footage for my videos. I haven't really played much Saturn or any Saturn at all. Besides that, what I've been playing is, well, Brian already went into more modern games. I just play PC games nowadays when talking about recent games. And I've been playing Assassin's Creed Origins. Now, I'm a huge fan of the Assassin's Creed series. I played every single game, including spin-offs, including everything. I played the first game back in the day. I loved it. I just fell in love with the series ever since. I really, really like Assassin's Creed. And the last one, Origins, it's amazing. I mean, it's set in ancient Egypt. That alone made my day, because the games were becoming more modern. Each game was set in a more recent date, up until the previous game, which was in the 19th century. So going back to the ancient world is just amazing. And the game, despite its flaws, the game is really fun. The world is amazing. The attention to detail, the graphics. I'm having a blast with it, really. So that's it for me.
Awesome, awesome. Sounds good. On my part, I have been doing a... I haven't really been doing so much gaming in the fact that I've actually been enjoying the gameplay. Now, don't get me wrong. I've absolutely enjoyed most of the games I've been playing. I'm not going to tell you what games I've been playing, because I have a little project I'm working on. And this project, y'all will probably be hearing about it here in about... probably about a month's time from whenever we drop this. So we're actually live recording it at this moment. So probably a month and a week, something like that. But I've been playing games from the Master System all the way up to the PS3. I have been giving my consoles a workout, one hell of a workout. Some of the specific games I've really been enjoying playing lately, two of them start with a G, and neither one of them are Gun Griffin. So, you're going to have to do a little ciphering, a little sleuthing, and figure that out for yourself. Besides that, I've been working on a good couple of videos, some of them for the junkyard, some of them for this other little project, if that gives you any little hint. But besides that, that's pretty much been it. I mean, it's pretty much been an easy week for me. I've been trying to take it easy. Like most people who are probably listening to the live stream portion of this, we weren't able to do our normal live stream like we normally do with the actual gameplay and everything. I kind of hate it, because I really enjoy those, you know, sitting down on the couch and getting to talk to everybody parts. But we really couldn't make that happen with my time schedule. And basically the live stream portion of this is our way of paying back to the community and letting y'all get a little bit of live stream action. And also on top of that, y'all are getting to see the backroom dealings, the unedited portions of Titancast. So hope y'all enjoy, and that's me. How about there, Simon?
Okay, so I've been playing a good few Saturn games recently. I've started to replay Police Notes again, which is something that I'd left for a long, long time. I had a good play of that the other day, which I really enjoyed. Been playing Bug and Bug 2, which are two games which you don't really hear too much about in the Saturn community, but I really enjoyed playing those two games. Pandemonium, and I dropped an article about my thoughts and experiences of Pandemonium, which is a 2.5D action platformer. I dropped an article about that on the main site today, so I've been playing a bit of that. The Facebook community, we usually at this point talk about the challenge that we've been doing on the Facebook community, and I have to say that we've left that for a little while, so rather than we talk about the challenge, I'm going to mention a member, if that's okay. Just like to give a shout out to Roberto Cristino, who's a member from Portugal. And he's someone who's followed the Saturn Junkyard since its days when it was just a blog, before we had the Facebook page or the podcast or the YouTube channel. One of our most prolific and loyal posters on the Facebook page. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Roberto, and mentioning the challenge or any of the photo albums that we're doing at the moment. I just wanted to give a particular shout to a member. So there you go. That's me.
Good deal, good deal. Nuno, you had a little something special you wanted to say as well?
Roberto, o povo tá contigo, pá. Força!
If anybody from Portugal or anybody who speaks Portugal understands what was just said, translate it for me. Nuno, you don't have to.
I won't. It's a surprise.
Jesus Christ, people. Come on, man. On top of all that, I wanted to go ahead and give a little bit of shout-outs while we had a chance. First of all, I want to talk about a Mr. Andrew Rosa from Mastercast TV. If you are not a fan of him, he started over on SegaBits, and he now has his own channel. He has more than one channel, but Mastercast TV is his gaming channel. Go over there and give him some love, man. He does stuff old school, in the trenches, dirt. I'm talking about, he runs composite video, RF sometimes, probably. I have no idea. He runs off of CRTs, VCRs, and DVD recorders. Give that dude some love. In today's world, doing all that to make videos takes some effort. And I'm going to tell you what, that dude right there has given us more shout outs than I can count already. And he is a loyal fan of the Junkyard, and he deserves some respect for that. On top of that, we have, of course, our other Sega Saturn brothers, the Sega Saturn Shiro crew, man. They have dropped in routinely for the Let's Plays, etc., etc., and they have really given heart and soul to not just the Junkyard itself, but to the Junkyard creative team. So I wanted to give them some love on top of that. Last but not least, we could not be here without the Dreamcast Junkyard. So, of course, as always, if you're a fan of Sega, if you're a fan of podcasts, go over there and give the DreamPod a little bit of love, man. They deserve it. They started off, they got this thing bought, they got the ball rolling, and they've been doing it for a long time since. So, with all that out of the way, let's go ahead and get into the meat and potatoes of things, as I like to say, and we're going to start talking about a little bit of gaming action. And
Real quick, I would like to add one more shout-out to the mix, and that is Saturn Memories, Chris.
Oh, God, yes. How did I forget about Chris, man?
And he's joined us for quite a few of the live streams the last few weeks. So it's really been great to have him as part of the community as well. And he, in his site, you know, Saturn Memories just is a fantastic repository of archived Saturn footage and gameplay and just also just random musings and random, like, I don't know, Segata Sanshiro punching bags and other random shit you can think of. It's pretty cool to peruse his Facebook page and YouTube channel to see all the random stuff he has there.
Most certainly. On top of that, they also have a Discord channel, otherwise known as SegaNet. If you go over to his channel, Saturn Memories on YouTube, you can find a link to it in the description, I believe, on the channel description. They have numerous ramblings over there. It's not 4chan. It is an awesome little group. They have some, they've got, I'll pull it up right now and I'll tell you what's going on with it. They have 8-bit, they've got Mega Drive, they've got Saturn, Dreamcast, arcade, PC. They cover everything whenever it comes to Sega. They love gaming and they have some very, very interesting conversations. So him and Clockwork Knight, those two over there, they pretty much run that thing and get on it, maybe. They love it. Again, with all that out of the way, meat and potatoes, let's get into it. We are going to be talking about the Saturn and the Dreamcast. Now, what are we going to be talking about with those? Well, kind of part of it's going to be, you know, our personal history with it. We're also going to be getting into some of the game series and the entries that were on both consoles. As well, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the projects that started development on the Saturn and moved over to the DC. Maybe get into a little bit of Bernie Stoller action. We're not going to do too much hate. No flame wars here. And possibly talk about a little bit of gaming action we wish would have came out on the Saturn. So, since Father K very, very seldomly gets to go ahead and be the moderator of sorts, so we're going to kind of do this more of a freelance kind of, you know, in the trenches method. It's not really going to be too scripted. We're going to go ahead and hand it over to Simon and let him get us kicked off with it.
Okay, thank you for that, Sam. Basically, this episode that we're doing today is establishing the links between the Saturn and the Dreamcast. One of the things that we noticed was there was a lot of traffic between the Saturn Junkyard community and the Dreamcast Junkyard community in terms of the Facebook pages. Many people who collect for the Saturn also collect for the Dreamcast. Now, of course, there were also many games which started life on the Saturn, such as Daytona, Virtua Fighter, Fighting Vipers, and so on, that then had a second part of the franchise brought out on the Dreamcast. There were also some games that maybe we'd hoped would make the transition from Saturn to Dreamcast games like Panzer Dragoon and Knights. Unfortunately, that never happened. Games like Shenmue, which started off development on the Saturn but then switched to the Dreamcast. So it's a huge topic that we thought we could cover today. Give our thoughts about some of the games that we like that have a franchise edition on both consoles, and perhaps some of the games that we'd hoped make the transition, and some of our own experiences of buying for and collecting Dreamcast games and consoles, plus Saturn games and consoles. So that's basically the idea for the show today, and we thought we would start perhaps by discussing some of the games that made it from the Saturn to the Dreamcast. So we'll start perhaps with some of the Sega games, and maybe we could just all chip in and chime in and talk about some of those. So I'm going to kick us off with a game which is very close to my heart, which is Sega Rally, which is of course the best driving game of all time. Game that came out on the Saturn and has rarely been equaled in terms of its handling, its physics, and so on. And it was perhaps a huge, great disappointment for me. Sega Rally made the transition to Dreamcast, and we got the second edition of Sega Rally, Sega Rally 2. It was actually an inferior game. So when we talk about these games, we're not necessarily describing always a better iteration as we move from console to console and from one hardware generation to the next. There has been a couple of disappointments. Sega Rally, I'm going to say, was a disappointment, and I'm going to throw out House of the Dead as something that was vastly improved, but I'll let you guys chime in now with another game, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about the common threads and one of the core tenets of my experiences with both consoles and what really drew me in as a fan, or to become a fan of both the Dreamcast and the Saturn, a lot of it goes back to what AM2 did and Yu Suzuki's work. I feel like they were just such a prolific core part of that arcade experience and building Sega's clout in that space, that, you know, when you had, even just at the outset of the Saturn, kicking off things with Virtua Fighter and whatnot, and then later on with the Virtua Cop games and Daytona USA, another one that was, you know, early on and then later upgraded with the Circuit Edition in Japan and Championship Circuit Edition. You know, they were just so heavily involved with that console from the get-go, and you know, all of that kind of tying to their pedigree in the arcades, and then that kind of transitioned over to the Dreamcast when they had, you know, Virtua Fighter 3, which is actually, that was originally going to be I think they were, you know, planning it for the Saturn as well, but by the time they got it up to the point where they could, you know, have a tangible working prototype, I think, you know, it the Saturn's fate was already kind of sealed, so they decided to push a lot of those projects to the Dreamcast later on. But of course there's Shenmue, which is a big one, which, you know, we will talk probably a little more in depth about later, when that was originally started for the Saturn and then eventually became a Dreamcast project. But for me, I mean, I think a huge part of my experience for both consoles just goes back to AM2 for sure.
Well, let me start with just a bit of history. My history with both consoles. The Saturn was my first console ever. I mean, technically, I had a clone of the Atari 2600, but that's not real. Like, it wasn't a real console in the sense that it had built-in games and stuff like that. So my first real experience with a console was the Saturn, and the Dreamcast was my second console. So these two consoles, the Saturn and the Dreamcast, formed my earliest memories with gaming and my first relationship with consoles and with a company behind them, so which in this case was Sega, for my first two consoles. And so this just to say that, as you know, I love the Saturn and I love the Dreamcast as well. But when you talk about the transition from the Saturn to Dreamcast, I get the feeling that it was kind of a weird one. I don't know how to explain that. But You know, this obviously varies by region, because on one hand, in Japan, the Saturn kept going and kept going strong up until the launch of the Dreamcast, and probably a bit further still. I don't know too much about that. I know that in the US, things were a bit weird, like they kind of prematurely killed the Saturn or something to move onto the Dreamcast. And in Europe, I think the change wasn't so drastic. But I don't know. Then we had all these games being pushed to the Dreamcast, as you mentioned. A lot of games were supposed to be released on the Saturn, but then were moved on to the Dreamcast, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I think that Shenmue, for example, became a much better game incomparably better Dreamcast than it could ever have been on the Saturn. And the same for Virtua Fighter 3, which was also supposed to come out on Saturn. I mean, the Saturn is already behind the arcade scene, because a lot of games were conversions of Model 2 games, and the Model 2 was much stronger much better hardware than Saturn. So, and then you already had the Model 3, so trying to convert the Model 3 game to the Saturn must have been nightmarish, and the Dreamcast was a much better choice. But I don't know, I get the feeling that it was a weird transition, and the fact that so many games from the Saturn, games that defined the Saturn, never came out, never had sequels for the Dreamcast. I'm thinking of Panzer Dragoon, for example. And we know that Sega wasn't one to kind of milk franchises, to just keep putting out games from the same franchise over and over. Sega was always one for innovation, so it was pretty standard to not have a sequel to a popular game. In the end, for example, we never had a proper Sonic game for the Saturn. But it was still, I think the benefit of sequels is that they kind of make a transition. They kind of build a bridge over different consoles, you know. So you have these series on, for example, you had, I don't know, Metal Gear Solid 1 on the PlayStation 1 and Metal Gear Solid 2 on PlayStation 2. So if you were a fan of that console maker and of that, you had like this sense of continuity. You were playing this game on the old console, and now you're playing this game on the new console. And I think the Saturn and the Dreamcast really lack that. It's not so much to criticize the library of each console, which is amazing. Both consoles have absolutely amazing games. But I think this sense of continuity was lost. That when I got to the Dreamcast, it felt like starting over. And once again, it wasn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I remember my very first Dreamcast game was Jet Set Radio, which was a new franchise. And my second game, Online, which wasn't exactly a new franchise, but was so different from the old Mega Drive games that it might as well have been a new franchise. But still, yeah, I think I lack that. I think I lack that sense of continuity between systems. And then you had the sequels that Simon gave the example of Sega Rally 2. I never actually played Sega Rally 2. I think I played it on the arcades, not on the Dreamcast. The few sequels that you had, sometimes you might as well not have had them if they weren't as good as the first game.
No, if I'm going to talk about the Saturn, I'm going to talk about the Dreamcast and how it correlates to me. Me and Brian were talking about it last night. Like, I came into the Saturn in October of 1997 in the United States. That is literally the tail end of the console's lifespan. There was a year maybe of good gaming behind that. And within even that first, even within that first year, over to October of 1998, Dreamcast was on it. I mean, that's all they were talking about anymore. Bernie Stoller had come in and Saturn is on our future and Dreamcast is on its way. And that's all there was. And I was so let down, and at the same time, I was so hyped up because I saw some of the early images of what was going to be the Dreamcast, and then I saw what I had on my Saturn, and it was such a graphical improvement. And I don't know about y'all, but back in the day, I was all about graphics. There was that late 90s. It was all about how the graphics were getting so much better. And from a kid who got his Genesis in 95 to his Saturn in late 97 to his Dreamcast in Christmas of 99, that four and a half, five-year period of time, there was so much graphical change that I have to tie all three of those consoles together. I didn't have a Sega CD, not at the time. I didn't have a Sega 32X, not at the time. Thank God, kind of, maybe, I don't know. But when it came to the Saturn, there was a couple of games I was extremely happy to see have sequels. You know, you were kind of talking about, you know, sequels there, Nuno. Anybody who's watched any of my videos on the channel automatically knows I absolutely love giant robots. Giant robots are a way of life for me. Mecha. I was one of them boys growing up and playing in the dirt with my action figures of giant robots and stuff. And yeah, I grew up, you know, watching Power Rangers, whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is I absolutely love that stuff. And Virtua on the Saturn, I played it in the arcades. I played it on the Saturn. And then when Virtua on Ontario, 10 gram or however you're supposed to say it, my brain just went blank. I absolutely loved the hell out of that game. I never had a twin stick set back in the day.
Is that the Canadian version?
No, it isn't. It's the actual
Ontario thing. I think it's Oratorio. I actually don't know myself. I think it's Oratorio Tengram. I don't know.
It might, like I said, my brain does a little fart every now and then. It might very well be Oratorio. I can grab it off the shelf, but I'll have to make a lot of noise in the process. But, you know, I always called it Ontario. I don't know. It doesn't matter. You threw me off, Brian. Why you got to do that? But no, you
keep things fresh. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, that's exactly why you. No, but
keep us on our toes.
Jesus Christ. No, but you know, I absolutely love that stuff. I really did. I absolutely love those games. I wasn't big into a lot of other arcade games. As much as I love some arcade games, I just didn't really get it. Like the Sega Rally, I didn't really ever appreciate Sega Rally. I appreciated more not the arcade-y style, but more simulator-style racers and driving games. So that never really was one that was really big on my list. I mean, I kind of got to go along with Nuno to a certain extent as well, that I was really happy to see a lot of fresh improvements on the Dreamcast side, even though I absolutely loved the Saturn. And I did have, you know, things like Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 on the Dreamcast, but Resident Evil didn't start life on the Saturn. I wish there had been a Resident Evil 2 on the Saturn, but, and, you know, in retrospective, it's probably better that it did wait until we got to the Dreamcast for that. When we're talking about new IPs for the system, Jet Grind Radio, I'm right there with you. Every single morning, I used to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I'd play that game until 7:15, until I had to go out and get up on the bus. Okay, and I would leave my Dreamcast on all day because I didn't have a VMU, because I was too poor to afford a VMU and a console and a game. And then I'd come home and I'd play the game for the rest of the night. And I can remember it took me like a week to beat that game doing it that way. On top of that, you had the Crazy Taxis. Dude, I love the Crazy Taxi. Crazy Taxi I first got to enjoy in the arcade, and whenever I got to play it at home, it was absolutely amazing. So, I mean, that whole period of Saturn and Sega, for me, is it's completely tied in with the arcade to some extent, but not at the same time. To me, I really put the arcade as a third option during that time period. But yeah, that's what I got.
I wanted to say that my history with the two consoles is a little strange as well. I've already confessed here that I had a Saturn 96, 97 period, but then went from the Saturn on my children's insistence to the PlayStation. So we then went from the PlayStation 1 to the PlayStation 2. And I missed out on the Dreamcast completely, didn't even know about it till about 2004. So when I first discovered the Dreamcast, it was like a revelation for me, and my passion to collect for that system, to find out about that system, to grab as many consoles and VMUs and peripherals and games and imports as I could. It was manic, and it was sort of passionate. And that lasted from about 2004 to about 2010. Spent a lot of money on the Dreamcast as a system. But at the same time, I was still buying for the Saturn. My local game station store, which was tucked in Blockbuster, There were racks and racks of Dreamcast stuff alongside racks and racks of Saturn stuff, and you could combine the two for a buy one, get one free deal. Many Saturn games at the same time. I was obsessed with the Dreamcast, didn't play them for many years. And then recently my passion for the Saturn has matched how I felt about the Dreamcast in that time period of 2004 to 2010, when I was kind of a little obsessed with the Dreamcast. I'm now feeling a similar passion burning for the Saturn. The two collection of games set alongside each other on a nice shelf all display. And at the moment, it far outweighs the Saturn collection, but the Saturn collection's catching up. Buying, and I'm doing a lot of investing at the moment. Hardware-wise, it's catching up as well. I've always had multiple Dreamcast collections, but at the moment, I'm buying up different varieties of Saturns, JVC Saturn, and the white Japanese Saturn, and so on and so on. So yeah, it's strange. My love at the moment for the Saturn matches my love for the Dreamcast, but the two things, they are tied together on my shelves and displayed together. The two things are two parts of one whole. They're a yin and a yang to me. They complete. I'm getting quite spiritual here. That's what happens when your name's Father Krishna. But to me, they are the yin and yang of gaming. They complete two halves of a perfect whole. And I see a connection between the two. It was interesting when I first got my Dreamcast and saw that there was another edition of Sega Rally. That was the game to play that I really wanted to know. Wow, if it was that good on the Saturn, it's going to be amazing on the Dreamcast. And was sorely disappointed in that. I think that was a learning curve for me. It was the first time I ever realized that a game with its second iteration on a new console, that you weren't always going to get a sort of a better game because the hardware was better. That was a bit of a learning curve for me. But yeah, sorry, that was something I just felt I needed to say, was how I got into the two systems.
I got to chime in real fast. Just to clarify things, the game that I was speaking about is not the Ontario Tanagram. It is this is my Southern accent, Southern brain, trying to make molasses out of a pine tree. My point is that it's Cyber Troopers Virtua on Oratorio Tanagram, or Tangram, or I'm just going to stop talking. Back to you, Brian.
Sure. You know, Simon, I think what you're saying, you know, kind of resonates with me as well. As far as I know, I think I'm the only one here that didn't have a Saturn when it was actually, alive market-wise. But, I actually came in at the Dreamcast at the ground level. I've talked about this in previous episodes where I pretty much saved my money all summer, $99.99, bought into the hype. One of the factors, I kind of looking back, you know, at my however old I was, 12 or whatever, when the Saturn was big, a lot of people even today criticize or lament the fact that it didn't have a proper Sonic game. And I was certainly aware of the Saturn, in its heyday. And I had mentioned those AM2 games, Virtua Fighter 2, Virtua Cop games, Daytona USA, Sega Rally, as you had brought up, Simon. Like, those games are games I loved in the arcades that I was really interested in playing on the Saturn, and Knights as well, and some of the other more exclusives that were not derived from the arcades as well, kind of caught my attention. But I think what kept me from pulling the trigger, other than being a child with, a lack of disposable income at the time, would have been, it might have actually been the fact that it didn't get a proper Sonic game. And I know that one of the things I was hyped up most for ahead of the Dreamcast launch was Sonic Adventure. And that was the very first game I bought on launch day. And, I had played the limited edition a long while before that. In fact, I think I played that game for at least a month or two before I got anything else, which ended up being like Soul Calibur and then a few of the other stuff as well, or a few of the other like launch games, and short after short games that were released shortly after launch. But you know, honestly, the Dreamcast I appreciated, and I think both consoles are going to be forever linked in the appeal they had from that arcade standpoint. But also, you know, when it came time for the Dreamcast, I think the goals at Sega were very different, and it was really cool to kind of see them just unleash their development, or their, you know, all of their studios onto like whatever projects they wanted to do. Some of those were arcade centric, some of those were original games, and you know, that level of ingenuity that was unleashed during that period really defined the Dreamcast for me as well. When we saw, you know, Jet Set Radio, like you were mentioning, Sam, or you know, Seaman and Crazy Taxi and Space Channel 5 and Shenmue and all these games from all of these high profile developers within Sega, or development teams within Sega, that were all firing on their all cylinders at the peak of their creative existence. I think ultimately maybe that could have led to or played a role in the console's eventual demise, just because, you know, they're maybe Sega wasn't as judicious in testing them for marketability and profitability and return on investment as maybe their competitors were at the time. But certainly, I love both consoles, and really for different reasons. And later on, you know, I'm also playing catch up, kind of like you were mentioning, Simon, with the Saturn, that, you know, now it's really just, you're kind of in the middle of that exploration phase, really just seeing all of the cool stuff that it had to offer.
So I wanted to ask this sooner, but I didn't want to interrupt. Sam, do you know what a tangram is?
Enlighten me there, Nuno.
What?
I said enlighten me there, Nuno. I tried to put a little heavy draw up on there for you.
Oh, sorry, I didn't get it. Well, I didn't look this up. I didn't have to, because I actually knew. It's like a puzzle with a real puzzle game, not like a computer game, with wooden pieces. And it was very popular in Portugal when I was a kid. I actually played with it in school, in elementary school. You basically have these different shapes, these different triangles of different sizes. And you make shapes with them. You arrange them in a way that you make shapes with them.
You say that, but we had those exact same things back here in the U.S. whenever I was growing up. And I guess I just never heard them called that.
That's a tangram. And you also mentioned Jet Set Radio, playing a lot of Jet Set Radio. Let me tell you something about Jet Set Radio. And this actually ties in to the topic, because, as I mentioned, my first console, my first real console, was the Saturn. And the Saturn had something that, at the time, I didn't realize wasn't standard for other consoles, which is built-in memory for save games. I just took it for granted. I mean, I have this game, I'm going to play this game, and it's going to be saved onto the system, onto the actual console.
You and me both, man. You and me both.
Well, glad I wasn't the only one. That's great to hear, because I mean, my friends had PlayStations with memory cards, but I never paid much attention to them, because whenever I went to their houses, we'll just play multiplayer games, and I would see the memory card sticking out, but I never really cared much about what it was or what it was for. So then I bought the Dreamcast, which was the first console I bought myself with my money, like the money that I would save from Christmas and birthday presents and like. So I wasted every single euro. I think it was already euros back then. We already had made the switch from scuds to euros, which was our old coin. I spent all the money I had on the actual console and a game to play, right? Jet Set Radio. And I didn't buy a memory card. So imagine my shock when I play Jet Set Radio for the first time and have a blast. I turn off the console, and then next day I go to play again, and I'm back to the beginning. And for the longest time, I couldn't afford a memory card, and my parents didn't really buy into the I need this to save my game. Oh, but you already have the console and the game. What else do you want? I mean, just shut up and play your game. And yeah, so I didn't get a memory card for the longest time. In fact, it wasn't until I bought Phantasy Star Online, which wouldn't even let you start a game without a memory card, because you had to create a character, and save the character data onto the memory card. It wouldn't even allow you to start the game, you know? So, yeah, it wasn't until then that my parents finally caved in and bought me a memory card. And it was the first time that I could make progress into Jet Set Radio, because up until then I got so far as, I don't know, third level or something, and I had to beat the tutorial. The tutorial wasn't skippable. You had to play the tutorial every single time you started the game. You couldn't just jump in to the first mission, and you couldn't choose missions. Well, that's, I wish you could choose missions at will, like in the old games where you had a stage select. No, I had to beat the tutorial every single time, and it was so goddamn annoying.
No, you're talking about like the whole saving aspect. Whenever you start up with a cartridge system, okay, you start up with the Genesis. I mean, granted, one of my cousins had a Sega Master System, so I got to play that first off. But whenever you start up with the Genesis, and a lot of games, if you even had to worry about saving, there was either a password feature or the cart itself backed up your game, okay? You don't think about saving. So whenever I got the Saturn, I never once owned a memory card for the Saturn until after 2000, okay? Everything I had, I saved directly to the memory on the console, and I just deleted it. I knew it had a memory system. I knew how to use it, but, you know, my battery lasted until like 2003. I think it lasted until that long, but I mean, my point remains, I didn't think about that. So it was honestly like mid 2000, almost late 2000, before I ever even purchased my first VMU. And the only reason I did it was, what was the game? It wasn't Phantasy Star. It was Shenmue. Shenmue was the game that got me to get a VMU. I think it was late 2000. Might have been. Regardless, pretty sure that was the game that made me do it, because I was renting it from the local Movies Galore. You want to talk about Shenmue? I would have loved to have seen some form of Shenmue on the Saturn. It might not have looked anything like it did now. It might not have held up as well. It might not have the cult following it had. But God, I would love to have a playable demo of that on the Saturn just to see what it does. Just let me walk around that first couple of towns, or even just that first little area. I don't know, but I digress. My point is that there was no way that you could sit down and play through that game in one sitting as a kid who had to go to school, as a kid that had to do homework, you know, had to watch his little brother whenever his mom was at work. Yeah, there was no way it was going to happen like that. So that, I'm pretty sure that was a game that actually got me into that. But back to some of the topics in regards to the games that were actually on both consoles, and we saw a series continue on. Not to beat a dead horse with, you know, giant robots and stuff, but I did my Mobile Suit Gundam side story review for the YouTube channel, which some people are watching us on right now. But the only reason I ever even got into those three games, which didn't happen until the early 2000s, because I didn't get into the import scene until the early 2000s. The only reason I even thought about looking for those games was because of a game called Mobile Suit Gundam Side Story Rise from the Ashes on the Dreamcast. So even though I kind of go up on that tangent to kind of say that there's a lot of games that were on the Dreamcast that I didn't even know existed on the Saturn in, you know, a former self, that if it hadn't been for the Dreamcast version and me playing it, I would have never looked back and possibly found those games. I mean, granted, now I'm huge into the Saturn. I've got massive collection. I've got multiple Saturns. I do this YouTube thing, blah, blah, blah. There's a good possibility I might not have ever, you know, found them games up until this point, if I was even doing this now. Because a lot of the fact that I kept going with the Saturn was the import scene. It gave me a huge option on games. It gave me the ability to play games I was never going to be able to play here in the States. So, I don't know, that's something we have to kind of think about too, is the retrospective. I granted, now Simon didn't ever even have a Dreamcast until after the fact. I mean, I know a lot of people who listen to us and, you know, frequent our channel and frequent our page on Facebook, a lot of them are late bloomers to the Saturn, and some of them were late bloomers to the Dreamcast. You know, we brought a lot of people, like I were alluding to, from the Dreamcast junkyard who came over to the Saturn junkyard. A lot of them people are just now getting started with Saturn. I mean, with the Dreamcast. And a lot of those people never even put eyes on a Saturn before any of this. So, in a lot of respects, their first experiences with Saturn games or series are going to start on the Dreamcast, and they're going to have a chance to look back on what was before they ever knew it.
See, for me, there was a couple of games where I first experienced them on the Dreamcast and then went back to them for the Saturn, like you've just been saying, Sam. One of those was House of the Dead. I'd played House of the Dead 2 on the Dreamcast with the light gun, and then saw House of the Dead 1 for sale in the local game station. And it was, instead of the usual £2.50 that Saturn games time, House of the Dead was £25. I actually played House of the Dead 2 before getting House of the Dead 1, but because I'd enjoyed it so much, I was very happy to pay the money that it cost for me to get House of the Dead 1. And another game that I experienced first on the Dreamcast was Daytona. Dreamcast game first, and then got the Saturn game way later than that, and actually found the Saturn game in the sort of reverse of in the same way as the Sega Rally thing, the Daytona on the Saturn I found to be better than the Daytona on the Dreamcast. So again, another lesson that a new console didn't necessarily need better games in some cases. So yeah, the games that came out, we've said, I think we've got Sega Rally, Daytona, we've got Virtua Fighter. Again, a game which I would suggest is better on the Saturn than it is on the Dreamcast, Virtua Fighter 3, which was hoping to come out on the Saturn, never did. It came out on the Dreamcast, and again, I would suggest it's not as good a game as Fight 2 or Fighters Megamix. And then I would say Fighting Vipers was another game which we got on both the Saturn and the Dreamcast. I'd say they were fairly comparable in quality. If you guys want to chime in and say any others that you've realized made that transition.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few points there. And to echo some of what you said, I played a lot of those games in their Dreamcast iterations long before I got to the Saturn versions. Daytona USA was one of them, as was Virtua Fighter 3. I think I played that before I played Virtua Fighter 2 on the Saturn. One thing I would say, I actually did enjoy the Dreamcast iterations of those. I don't know if more so than the Saturn. But, you know, those were games that got me hyped for the console at a very early stage. And so I think I have a little more, or at least Sega Rally and Virtua Fighter. So I think there's a little more nostalgic attachment to it. But by the time Virtua Fighter 3 came out, I mean, it was up against some tough competition with Fighters, at that early launch window, Dreamcast stage. You know, when you had Soul Calibur and you had, Street Fighter Alpha, Marvel vs. Capcom, you had a lot of the, or Alpha 3, I mean, which was also on the Saturn. We can talk about that in a bit. In even non-traditional fighting games, Power Stone and Ready to Rumble Boxing, I feel like Virtua Fighter 3 really got lost in the shuffle. And by that time, it was a three-year-old game. I mean, it had been out in arcades. I think it was one of the first Model 3 games, right? Or was it Model 2? I can't remember. But anyway, it came out, midway through the Saturn's life cycle. And so by the time they had it ready for the Dreamcast, it just wasn't really able to hold a candle technologically to a lot of the other fighters that were on the system. Although I did appreciate that, and I do have fond memories of Virtua Fighter 3, even if it ultimately isn't my favorite game in the series. I really loved how they... the stage, the various, topography elements and how that factored into your strategy in each stage. And it really made each space feel unique and kind of a cool little arena atmosphere that I think was a little more interesting than the standard platform, just, you know, flat planes that we were used to for, in the previous entries. Sega Rally is another one. I think I do agree. I think the Saturn version ultimately was well ahead of what the Dreamcast sequel ended up doing. But I like both of those games as well.
Well, I don't have much experience with the franchises that were launched for both consoles, because back then I had a really small Saturn collection. I actually mentioned it on an old video for YouTube. I had like only a handful of games. And then fast forward to Dreamcast, and I also had a very limited collection of, once again, only around half a dozen games. So from all of the games that I had on the Saturn, the only ones that saw sequels on the Dreamcast were Virtua Fighter. I played every Virtua Fighter on the Saturn. I had every Virtua Fighter on Saturn. And but when 3 came to for the Dreamcast, it was one of the first games, I think, if not a launch title, at least close around launch, and I missed the launch of the Dreamcast. So when I got in Dreamcast, people weren't already talking much about Virtua Fighter 3, so I missed out on that. I also had Virtual On, which I absolutely loved on the Saturn. But the sequel, I don't know if it was lack of marketing on my region. It wasn't until I got into the Dreamcast again, like around the time of the Dreamcast Junkyard, when I got into it. It was my second round with the Dreamcast, much like I also had a second round with the Saturn. It wasn't until then that I actually learned that there was a Virtual On on the Dreamcast, and it blew my mind. Oh my god, I never knew about this. So I really don't have any experience. There is a game that I had on the Dreamcast that was a sequel of a game that existed for the Saturn, although I had not played it on the Saturn, which was Dead or Alive. I bought Dead or Alive 2 for the Dreamcast, and I loved it. And it wasn't until much later that I went back to the original Dead or Alive on the Saturn. But it's kind of different, because it's not like a Sega franchise, you know? It's a series of games that were also released for Sega consoles, but they weren't really iconic of Sega consoles. I mean, for the Saturn, it wasn't even released outside of Japan. Dead or Alive, that is. And Dead or Alive 2 wasn't an exclusive for the Dreamcast. It also came out on PlayStation 2 with an improved version, actually, with extra stages and characters too. I think at least stages it had more, which when I found out about that, I was so mad, like, damn, why did Dreamcast version, why is it missing stuff like this? I mean, every version should be the same. Once again, I was naive back then. I thought that every version of a game was supposed to be the same across platforms. So I really don't have much experience with that, although I find it curious, if depressing, if a bit sad, that so many iconic Sega franchises seem to have gotten worse. I mean, Simon addressed this right at the beginning with Sega Rally 2, and then we talked about Virtua Fighter 3, which I haven't played it much, so I'm not one to talk about its quality or lack thereof, but the overall consensus from the community seems to be that it is worse. And Daytona as well. I have played Daytona on the Dreamcast, and although the graphics are just mind-blowing, the controls never sat right with me. I can't play that game. I have tried messing with the sensitivity of the steering, but I can't do it. And yeah, that's it. Also, games that were never released for the Dreamcast and should. I don't know if you want to go into that next, but it was something that we talked about addressing, games that were never released for the Dreamcast and should have been. Well, there's a Model 3 game, actually, that I think would have been a perfect fit for the Dreamcast, which is Scud Race. It's an amazing game. It's like Daytona. Very similar to Daytona, actually, in terms of gameplay. And I think it's really up there with Daytona 2, which also came out for the Model 3. And it's just an amazing game, and it never saw a home conversion for a home console. And I think it deserved it. And I think it would have been absolutely perfect on the Dreamcast. And it never came out. Why, Sega? Why?
Yeah, and I also wonder real quick, two things. Model 3, from what I understand, I mean, it was actually very difficult to get Model 3 arcade games ported over to the Dreamcast relative to Naomi, which, you know, was more or less built with the Dreamcast architecture in mind, so those ports came a lot easier. And maybe that had something to do with it, that they just felt that they had to put too many resources in, and by the time they got it to work properly, it might, be too old of a game to market as well. But you also mentioned, just the Daytona conversions. Nuno, did you use the steering wheel for the Dreamcast version by chance?
No, I didn't have it. But if it plays better with racing wheel, I think it's still the game's fault, because it should be perfectly playable with the gamepad. I mean, they realize that like 90% of gamers are going to play with the gamepad. If it's better with the racing wheel, that's great. I would love to play it with that setup. But yeah, it should really have been made playable with the controller.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I mean, I feel like the light kind of did come on when I started playing the Dreamcast version of Daytona with, or I guess Daytona 2001, as it would have been known outside of North America, with the racing wheel. I think that is probably my favorite way to play this game, but I still love the Saturn versions, and I do agree they hold up a lot better with the standard control pad. Even the two-dimensional, just the D-pad, compared to the Dreamcast with the same controller setup.
By the way, have you played Daytona 2 on the arcades, the model?
Well, a long, long time ago, yeah. And I love that game. I would love to track it down, and maybe even if it's like MAME or something. Because I thought the course designs and everything was just super imaginative, where you have like kind of that theme park with all the different areas, and then you have like the New York style city level, and I thought the courses just looked really cool.
The stages are amazing, and by the way, I have great news for you, because there's a Model 3 emulator called Supermodel, which is still being actively developed, and it works with racing wheels for the PC. I have a Logitech Driving Force GT, and it plays perfectly with Daytona USA 2, and it also supports force feedback, so you can even have that. And it's amazing, man. You really have to try it out. You can bump up resolution. You can run it in through widescreen 16:9 aspect ratio. It's amazing. But I actually just asked that because since you seem so familiar with Daytona USA on the Dreamcast with racing wheel and everything, could you compare both games and tell me if is there a big difference? Because I have experience with Daytona USA on the arcades, but not Daytona USA Dreamcast with a racing wheel. How do they compare to each other?
The arcade version was its own monster, and I don't even think the Dreamcast version quite got there. Eventually, when they re-released it or the arcade version directly to Xbox Live Arcade and PSN, I think that version, playing that with a racing wheel is probably the best parody you're going to get with the arcade version at least on a console. The Dreamcast version, I think, it was a little different as we were talking about it. It handled a little differently, but I feel like, and it had also different tracks. It had a few tracks from the Championship Circuit Edition, but then it also added new ones on top of that. They weren't particularly as memorable as the three staple courses of the original game, but I think it was still fun. But it still doesn't quite compare to the arcade version, either performance-wise or gameplay-wise, and I think you do have to go to one of the modern digital iterations to get that experience.
I just chime in here and say that one wish it had a transition from Saturn to Dreamcast, it'd have to be Virtua Cop. I know that Virtua Cop was included Sega Smash Pack for Saturn in the US, for Dreamcast in the USA.
But, Virtual Cop 2, yeah.
Wish that it would have been perhaps a Virtual Cop 3 brought out for the Dreamcast with improved graphics and perhaps a longer gameplay. That would have blown my mind.
I would entirely agree with that. And one thing I want to touch back on with Nuno, DOA on the PS2. And this is coming from someone who loves the PS2. It looks like trash. That's extreme. That's extreme. I should take that a little bit. It doesn't look like trash. It doesn't look great. The Dreamcast could really put out some vibrant details that the PS2 was not capable of producing, especially natively for most people who were using the equipment, because most people here in the States were still using either RF or composite. So they were getting a very, very, very ugly image. That's not to say that everybody was running around with VGA on the Dreamcast, but it was a lot easier to get a, it was a lot easier to go the VGA route than it was to have a TV with component for a lot of people, because most of your standard 20, 24 inch TVs that, you know, tube TVs, most of us had, the best you had on there was S video. You had no option for component. So that's one thing to take into consideration. If you want the best looking version of DOA, in my opinion, you got to go to the Xbox. You got to go to the Xbox with the Dead or Alive Ultimate. I mean, that's my personal view of it. Regardless of that, though, you know, one kind of cool thing about having this thing go live is we have a number of people in the chat who are kind of rendering out some ideas for us. And one of those ideas, and I really want to elaborate on this, I think we can kind of, you know, wrap things up with this, is Shenmue on the Saturn. We've brought it up a couple of times, and this is one of those love or hate topics. People either absolutely love the game or they absolutely hate the game. I haven't really met a whole bunch of people who are in the middle. Of course, I'm sure there are, but I haven't really had the chance to really inquire upon them why they're just so lukewarm or not hating or whatever the case is. Normally, everybody nowadays is just complete troll. But to kind of get into that, you know, I don't think there really is a possibility of finding a prototype. I don't think a prototype even exists anymore. And if the prototype did exist, kind of my fear is that it was on a development. You would have to find one of those Saturn CD silvers, whatever you want to call them, that would have the information on it. And the question really is, was there even any gameplay yet at that point? Or was it all just cinematics? Because I don't think I've ever seen a trailer that had actual gameplay in it. It was all cinematic.
I don't know, actually. Oh, it looks like Kay thinks that there is, actually. Well, I'll have to get into that in a bit. Nuno, what did you want to say?
Simon mentioned Virtua Cop 2. As far as I know, the port of Virtua Cop 2 for the Dreamcast was based on the PC version, not the Saturn one. And it makes one think, was the Saturn really so hard to program for that even with the source code, would it have been so hard to port the games to other platforms? Well, of course, they moved development of Shenmue, for example, which was supposed to be a certain exclusive. But still, it's interesting that they chose to go with the PC version of Virtua Cop 2 for the Dreamcast. And he also mentioned Virtua Cop 3 would have been a great game for the Dreamcast. I agree, although it was developed for the arcade system, the Shihiro, which was basically an Xbox. The first Xbox, it was an arcade board based on the Xbox. And it's actually possible to play Virtua Cop 3 on an Xbox, although it has to be modded, not just in terms of software to play backups, but you have to actually mod the hardware itself. And it's a pretty hardcore mod, because Shihiro had double the amount of RAM. So you actually have to install another RAM chip to an original Xbox, and which is also modded to play backups. And then you can play Virtua Cop 3 on a real Xbox console. And it's the only way to play it, because it has never been emulated on the PC or something. So it's really hardcore, but it is possible. Although, yeah, I really wish it would have come out on the Dreamcast, even if the graphics had taken a bit of a hit.
So, Simon, you want to just jump right into Shenmue now?
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, if you play the Sega Smash Pack edition of Virtua Cop, there are adverts for the game Shenmue in there, so it kind of all gels in nicely. So yeah, let's Shenmue. I can't think of a game that is more representative of the link between Saturn and Dreamcast and Shenmue, apart from the fact that Ryo owns a Saturn and can win items at his local tomato convenience store. As Sam's already said, there was the incredible Project Berkeley footage of Shenmue running on the Saturn, which we've had some news flashed in from over at the Sega Saturn Shiro podcast. He's told us that there is actually playable demo footage of Shenmue, although it's obviously very secretively stored somewhere. And so, Sam, in answer to your question, it's not just cinematics. There is actual real gameplay for that. So that's something hot off the presses right now.
Well, what I have to do at this point is get a hold of this gentleman and get that copy, and then I'm going to put that copy across the net, and we can all play that little 5 seconds of whatever the hell it is going on, because that would be absolutely... That is something that the community needs. That is not something that should be hidden from the community, point blank. That's something that should be put out there for the community to have something to partake in it. Because as so many people in the chat during this live stream have already alluded to, a lot of people, myself included, that was the beginning of my RPG. That was the beginning. I mean, yeah, we had our turn-based RPGs, et cetera, et cetera. But Shenmue was a life simulator. And for me, it really... Because of what was going on in my life at the time, it gave me a way to escape from that and be somewhere that I could find contentment and some form of happiness. I'm not going to derail this whole thing into my backstory, but my point is, there's a lot of people who have had their entire lives touched by that game. And to be able to know its history, to be able to play it in its incarnations beforehand, that would probably be one of the greatest services an individual could do for the community. Not just because I want to play it, but just because of the history that's involved with it. And most of us, myself included, the only way I even knew about Shenmue on the Saturn was because of the bonus information that was on the Shenmue 2 for US on Xbox. That was like the only reason I even knew about the game. Period.
Yeah. Go ahead, Simon.
I was just going to say, Sam, you articulated what I was thinking. For me, it was the highest point of gaming to be able to play just 5 seconds of that as a Saturn game. All I was going to say, Brian, was there are so many things between the Saturn and Shenmue, including the fact that obviously it was going to be a Virtua Fighter RPG when it first started out. Capsule toys that you can get of the Virtua Fighter kids. There are posters on Rio's bedroom wall of Virtua Fighter characters, and there are just so many connections between the two consoles, between the Saturn and the Dreamcast. Even though it completely is an anachronism, there's no way Rio should have had a Saturn, because he's set in the 80s, I believe. So how he managed to have a Saturn But so that was all I was going to say. So just the connections for me are ever evolving. And as you say, Sam, it was a game. Shenmue is a game that touched my life. And to know that there was a Saturn, that it was conceived on the Saturn, for me was a very special thing to find out.
Besides the fact that Ryo is a time traveling god who went forward in time to bring the Saturn back to the 80s so that he could enjoy it at his leisure, this is sure. My position to the community. This is my proposition. Kickstarter, get it going. Get the money together. We'll pay the dude. If we can make Shenmue 3 happen, we can make Shenmue on the Saturn become a reality. If it's out there, we can get the money for it.
I might also say, throwing this out there as a possible fan theory, maybe Ryo is not, maybe he's not a young Akira, but he's a young Segata Sanshiro instead, a time traveling one.
That is that. Of course. That is it. Period. That is truth. That is testimony. That is biblical. It is.
It's done. Canon.
It's canon now. Ryu is. He is Sanshiro. Period.
You know what? Also, Sagata Sanshiro played Ryu's father in the original Shenmue.
That's right.
So you know the connections keep building. There it is becoming a yin yang spiritual thing. I think all of a sudden we're building a whole sort of theory out of this thing right now.
Wow. So, I mean, to take a step back to the, at least the tangible things we do know about what the Saturn version had as far as the environments and the cinematics in the video that, Sam, you were mentioning, that was included in Shenmue 2's North American release for the Xbox. I mean, I also want to take another step back and just explain how much Shenmue does mean to me. I mean, I would say even now it is my favorite video game of all time. When I am thinking about what appeals to me most about games, it's games that do something unique, and especially spatially, when they provide environments that you can explore and are heavily detailed and just have a ton of little moments and things that really force the player to leverage their own curiosity to get the most out of exploration, out of the game, all the attention to detail, being able to follow people or NPCs around the map on their daily schedules, to talk to anybody in the game, to interact with any objects, just about open drawers, knock on doors. Like, I mean, it was the mundane things that game depicted that made it stand out so much, not just among games at the time, but even today. You just don't see that level of detail in modern video games. Everybody is kind of focused on making their worlds as large as possible. Everything's open world, but what's sacrificed is the detail. And when I think back of the games that really drew me in and gave me a place that is worth exploring and remembering, Shenmue hits that on, you know, that just does it better than any other game ever has. I mean, I love the Yakuza games too, and they do have a little bit of that too. But I just don't see anything rivaling Shenmue in the sheer attention to detail of its environments, and I love it every bit for that. Seeing how those environments translated over to the Saturn in that video was in itself astounding. You know, it would have been nice to see some gameplay or other details or NPCs. I'm not sure to what extent the Saturn would have been able to handle a crowded field of all of the interactable objects and all of the, you know, moving NPCs, non-player characters that the Dreamcast version ultimately had on the Saturn. I think that would have been quite a feat in itself, and I don't think there was anything in that video that necessarily suggested that was part of the scope of that project at the time, but certainly just the detail in those environments themselves would have put it head and shoulders above what any other game was doing that generation in depicting realistic and believable areas to explore. And I think the cinematics and animation were also very impressive for what that prototype had showed. I just don't know what, you know, to expect gameplay-wise, which I think does fuel that uncertainty, does fuel that curiosity of like, oh, wow, what would have been what would that have been like on the Saturn? My expectations are maybe a little bit lower for that. I would kind of give it a wide berth, given how much the Dreamcast, you know, that was a pretty taxing game even on the Dreamcast. So, and it was certainly one of the most ambitious ones of all time. And I love it every bit for that.
Shenmue was the first time in my life, in my young life at the time, that I was fired from a job. And even though it was just a game, it still hurt, man. It still hurt. I got up every day so early to drive a damn forklift, even though we would race around first, just fooling around with my mates. And then I would work with a forklift, moving crates from one place to the other all day. And then because of something that happened that wasn't even my fault, it wasn't Ryu's fault, I was fired. And goddamn, man, it hurt, guys. It hurt.
Plot twist, Nuno is Ryu. He is Sagata Sanshiro.
Terrible forklift driver.
Oh my, not to completely derail this, we were talking about one thing and it turned into a whole other thing. This was not meant to be a Shenmue love fest. You know, one thing I do want to address is, as some of the people in the comments section have been alluding to, that Shenmue is a very polarizing game. And I think there is a heavy dose of nostalgia, but we also have to credit it for what it was able to do. Whenever it came to open world games, it was at the forefront of what a lot of open world games have become to this day, the level of interaction. Not everything had to be directly tied to a quest. You could just do whatever you wanted. It was a life simulator, like I stated earlier. But to back away from that topic and go ahead and wrap things up, we've already been going at it for about an hour and 10 minutes at this point. It was a good talk, gentlemen. It was a good talk. Does anyone have any last, final, closing thoughts they want to say? Make it quick.
I feel like I've said more than enough already.
Brian?
Me too.
So no.
Brian has said enough? All right. Nuno, you got any closing thoughts?
We should have got the Panzer Dragoon on Dreamcast, guys.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about Orto. Orto was amazing. Orto was amazing on the Xbox. I wouldn't trade Orto on the Xbox for a Dreamcast version, but we should have gotten another Panzer Dragoon game on the Dreamcast. Can you imagine an RPG like Saga?
Dude, did we bring that up? Because that's one of them games that really should have been brought to the Dreamcast. As late as it was in development, it should have been brought to the Dreamcast if we didn't already say that.
Yeah, and in many ways,
Saga 2 on the Dreamcast. Can you dream of that?
And in some ways, I kind of view Skies of Arcadia as kind of filling that void a little bit, in that it did mesh this large, explorable world that was that you kind of linked by airships, which acted, especially later on when you had the airship combat with larger enemies, kind of mimicked a little bit of, well, not really, but it was like kind of the strategic, even though it was turn-based combat, that really kind of played at some of the themes and carried some of those over that Panzer Dragoon Saga had established, which I thought was really cool.
All right. So with all that said and done, we're going to go ahead and do our closing remarks. On behalf of all of us here at the Saturn Junkyard, Titancast specifically, love every one of y'all who came out for the live stream. Every one of y'all who are going to pick this up and listen to it later on the fact. Y'all are the viewership. Y'all are our audience. Y'all are why we do this. We love and appreciate every single one of y'all. News to everybody. We are almost at 250 subscribers on YouTube. We can make that happen this week. Hell, we might be able to make it happen today of this recording. Regardless, so we're not trying to push it. We're just saying we really appreciate it, because I'm going to tell you right now, most of us didn't even think we'd get this far. Besides all of that, I think we can go ahead and call it good. You know where to find us. We're on Buzzsprout. We're on Blogspot. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Play. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook. I mean, we got groups. We're on Twitter. We're just about everywhere you can find us. Just type in the Saturn Junkyard and you will find us. I promise you, you will find us. So with all that being said and done, I'm the Southern Sega Gentleman, and this has been Titancast. This is us signing off.
It's been real, guys.
Stop. Just stop.